6 years of AEW Dynamite. My goodness. I've been doing these streams for 6 years. Apparently, I have. I've been here since day one. I know many of you have been with me since day one when we started these streams in October of 2019. Dynamite tonight was back in Florida. They were in Hollywood, Florida at the Hard Rock with a slightly bigger audience than they've had in some places for Dynamite in recent weeks. I think they had about 3,000 people in the venue. Hard to see because you could see some empty seats. It was very dark. But they were at the Seminole Hard Rock for this anniversary episode, which honestly felt like your typical episode of Dynamite, just with an extra half an hour tacked on, since this was a 2.5 hour show. But man, you know, I think back to the beginning of these streams that I was doing in the early days of Dynamite. Man, there was so much excitement back then. It was a different vibe because people truly were looking for an alternative. And that's how AEW was really branding themselves. If you didn't like what you were seeing, you know, on the other channel, you could tune into this other show, which promised more energy, faster pace, faster action, newer faces, right? They were trying to offer an alternative and something that was exciting at a time when wrestling just really wasn't all that exciting. And those early days of Dynamite, and it really wasn't that long before the pandemic hit and we had no crowds. It was October until the beginning of March. They were actually building to the first Blood and Guts, which we ended up not getting for, you know, a while. It came much later on in front of no people. But those early days of Dynamite were very special. It was a special time to be a fan of the product. It was very fun. And also, when I think back, people have asked me, like, oh, what's your favorite moments or what's your favorite episodes of Dynamite from over the years? There's actually a couple that stand out. There was one episode of Dynamite right before COVID ruined everything. And they had Kenny Omega, and this might have been actually before Revolution, but they had Kenny Omega and Hangman Adam Page against the Lucha Bros, which I believe was for the AEW tag team titles. That was the same show that Cody Rhodes and Wardlow had their cage match, that tall-ass steel cage. I don't remember what else happened on that show, but I remember that being one of my favorite episodes. And then, of course, the Grand Slam show, the first one they did at Arthur Ashe Stadium back in 2021, right? Was it 2021 or 2022? Might have been 2021. But that first Grand Slam show, Bryan Danielson's first match in, he's standing on one side of the ring. Kenny Omega is standing on the other. And just, I wasn't in the building for that one. I went to Grand Slam, I think it was the following year. So I wish I could have been there for that. They had 20,000 people in Arthur Ashe Stadium for this Kenny Omega, Bryan Danielson match. And that was that 30-minute draw that they went to. But that was so, it was one of those moments that when you think back on the last 6 years of this show, I don't see how you don't have that moment in your top five. Like, that was a special moment. That was a match that I never thought we would get to see. And not only were we getting to see it, but it was in this, you know, different company in front of 20,000 people in New York. Who would have thought? That, to me, is the other kind of favorite episode. But when I think about the best episode of Dynamite, And the saddest episode, it's still the Brody Lee tribute episode that they did. It was just really well done. And it's a shame. It sucks that it had to happen at all. But that was the night I really thought that, you know, Tony Khan and AEW, they handled that with class. They handled that exactly the way that they should have. They did a tremendous job with it. You have the good moments. You have bad moments. You have fun moments. You have sad moments. That is the saddest of them all. But to me, top to bottom, still the best episode of Dynamite this company has ever produced. So there have been a lot of good times, a lot of bad times. There's been high points, there's been low points. As Kenny Omega said in his promo tonight here on this show now, yeah, and again, you're going to get a lot of comments from a lot of different people, and people are going to be angry at me saying this, but, you know, Dynamite is not what it used to be. It's just not. It's different. You know, they have a ton of talent. Nobody is denying that the talent isn't there. And they certainly do offer things on this show that you could consider an alternative that you won't normally see on, you know, any other weekly TV shows. That isn't always a good thing. But it's just, it's a different company. It's a different show. It's a different vibe altogether. And the biggest difference, of course, is the fact that they're running smaller buildings on most weeks. You know, back then it really felt like, man, this is a real kind of head-to-head, not head-to-head, but you know what I mean. Like, you know, you have these weekly shows that clearly are competing on some level, and they're competing also in terms of when you put them on, they look, you know, you have these big crowds and they look similar in that regard, and you can just feel like, okay, there's like a groundswell of support here for this product, and they have 8,000 people, 6,000 people, 10,000 people in the building. That's the biggest element to me that's missing from these shows. I wish that they had the ability to put out a product that would appeal to the masses in a way that would get them back into the buildings on a weekly basis the way they were 5 or 6 years ago. And they're not there. So for all the talk about how this was the best AEW year creatively, I've heard that a lot. Tony Khan himself has said that he thinks it's better than ever. You know, the creative and the shows and the segments, it's better than ever. And it's not. I mean, he's certainly entitled to that opinion. He's partial because it's his show. So, of course, he's going to think it's as good as ever. Everything's great. But it's not. It's not. And my hope as we, you know, head into year 7 and year 8 and so on is that they can try to recapture some of that magic that was missing the last few years and that's missing right now that we had there at the beginning of this Dynamite run. And it will be reflected in the houses. It will be reflected in the, you know, ability on their part to run bigger venues again and put more people in the buildings and get that electricity back and turn the lights up a little bit. Because, you know, when they dampen the lights a little bit, it's because they don't want you to see all the empty seats. I hope they can get away from that. I really do. And then creative, of course, is a whole other issue because, you know, it comes down to stories. More than anything else, you know, they have to give you matches and stories that grab you and bring you in. But Dynamite at the very beginning there was a special time. And I was very happy to have many of you with me for those shows. And even now, happy to have you for these shows as well. Let's talk about this show tonight because we have the return of Kenny Omega. We have not seen Kenny Omega in several weeks. He was back in action on the show tonight. He did not make a surprise appearance. He was announced in advance, just randomly announced. They put him in a trios match, so that is how he made his return on this show. But he was not the only one making his return on the show tonight. Andrade is back. Boy, that didn't take long. He didn't waste any time. Andrade is back in AEW. And Andrade is not only back in AEW, but Andrade is right back into a faction. He is now a member of the Don Callis family. So I hope you're keeping score. I hope you have like a piece of paper maybe tacked to the wall in your office or just in your room. And you write out all the members of the Callis family so that you can try to keep track of them. Because it's to the point now where it's nearly impossible to, like if I were to tell you on the spot, I want you to name every single member of the Callis family. You've got 30 seconds. Go. I'm going to guess that the majority of you are going to end up missing one or two names. It's to that point now where it's just very difficult to keep track of exactly who is and is not a member of the Don Callis family. You might be better off trying to name everybody who isn't a member of the Callis family. It might actually go quicker that way. But yes, Andrade is back. Just weeks after we learned that he was gone from WWE, there he was on Dynamite tonight attacking Kenny Omega. And shaking hands with and hugging Don Callis. Let me show you a photo of what this fucking family looks like now. Okay? And I don't even think this is everybody. In fact, I know it's not everybody because fucking Wardlow's not there. But this is what most of the family looks like now. This is the latest makeup of the Don Callis family. This man is fielding a fucking football team is what he's doing. Either that or he's getting ready to start his own promotion. Going to call it CFW, Callis Family Wrestling. You've got Josh Alexander, you've got Andrade, you've got Okada. Who is that in the background? We got Kyle Fletcher in front. Who is he blocking? Is that Lance Archer? I think that's Lance Archer. Kyle Fletcher, Rocky Romero, Konosuke Takeshita, Hechicero, Wardlow, who's currently on the injured list. Brian Cage is currently on the injured list. He may be on the outs with the Callis Family. I think they were beefing on social media. So I'm not even sure if he's actually a member of the family anymore. And then there's that masked man that you see. Yes, we didn't just get one new member of the Callis family tonight. we got two new members of the Callis family. Oh, yes, because Hologram was injured. He was injured in the tag team match on the show last week. So they shot a very quick angle on Collision to write him off. It is a legitimate injury. It's a knee injury. He's going to be gone for a long time. And so you think, poor El Clone. I can't even say that name with a straight face. I think they were calling him Clon. Oh, Mark Davis. That's right. Yeah, Mark Davis is still hurt. Did I miss anybody else? I'm sure I did. I can't disrespect Mark Davis now. One of the most important members of the Don Callis family. But yes, El Clone or El Clon or whatever the fuck they're calling him, they have been teasing an evil version of Hologram. It's like Sin Cara and Sin Cara Dark from many years ago. And so the idea, I'm sure, tonight was going to have Kyle Fletcher beat Hologram with an assist from El Clone, who would cost Hologram the TNT Championship match, and then they would go off and they would feud, and they would probably have a match at WrestleDream. Well, that dream is dead. The dream is done. It's finished. Hologram is gone. El Clone, though, he's here, and he is now a member of the Callis family. And we'll talk about, you know, what happened in these segments and how this all came about. But my goodness, how much bigger and bloated can this family get? I actually am very entertained by it. I have to say, it is to the point now of it's a parody, is what it is. It is a wrestling parody. So all you can do is just look at it and laugh. You know, it's great comedy. It really is. But now we also know who is going to be challenging Hangman Adam Page for the AEW World Championship. Thankfully, it is not a member of the Callis family, which it looked like it was going to be, or actually the Death Riders. But either the Death Riders or the Callis family, those are the two top heel factions that comprise the majority of the roster. And it looked like it was going to be somebody from one of those groups, maybe the Death Riders. It is not going to be a heel. It is going to be a babyface in Samoa Joe. Hangman and Samoa Joe will wrestle for the AEW World Championship at WrestleDream. That was made official tonight. We got the graphic. Oh my God, Trent Barretta. I forgot about Trent Barretta. Fuck. Who else? I have to be missing somebody else. I missed Mark Davis. I missed Trent Barretta. Who else are we missing? You think I'm joking when I say that it's parody at this point. It really is. I feel like Trent's always injured. I mean, poor guy. He's always got something going on with the neck or what. I don't even know what's the nature of the injury that's got him out right now. It might still be his neck. He's kind of like Adam Cole, where he feels like he's been plagued by injuries for a good chunk of his run here in this company. But yes, Trent is another one. Rocky Romero, I mentioned. We'll get into how this whole Samoa Joe Hangman thing came about. It was very weak. It was very forced. I like the match. How we got there left a lot to be desired. But at least we know now who the man is going to be standing opposite Hangman at the pay-per-view. Because MJF, again, he is gone right now. He's off filming a movie, I believe. We're not going to see him for a while. He's got that contract. But until he's back, we're really in a holding pattern right now with Hangman Page until MJF is back and ready to cash in his contract, which he has to give advance notice of. None of this money in the bank bullshit. So if he's going to challenge Hangman at Full Gear, if he's going to challenge him at World's End, which is where I think it's going to happen, he's going to have to give advance notice that he's ready to cash in that contract. And when he cashes in that contract, I do believe that he will win the championship. Now, this is also the second week in a row that we have the new AEW Women's World Champion, Chris Statlander, in the main event, which is great for her. Main event here for the second week. Tonight it was in a tag match. It was her and Darby Allin against Wheeler Yuta and Marina Shafir. Yes, Wheeler Yuta and Marina Shafir in the main event here on Dynamite. In what ended up being a tornado match, I feel like I had already seen one of these matches this week. We got another one tonight. This one was of the mixed tag team variety, though. That's the difference between the two tornado matches that we got on TV this week. I do have to say this. Hangman and Samoa Joe, right? WrestleDream. AEW World Championship. Chris Statlander and Tony Storm, Timeless Tony Storm, now official for WrestleDream for the AEW Women's World Championship. The Wrestle Dream card is coming together. But it's funny to me that they have a show next week literally called Title Tuesday. Not Taco Tuesday. Title Tuesday. And poor Title Tuesday is really getting the short end of the stick here because all the big championship matches are being announced for the pay-per-view. Dynamite is on Tuesday next week. It's being preempted from its normal slot, and they're calling it Title Tuesday. They're calling it Homecoming as well because they're going to be back at Daly's place in Jacksonville. But the only title match that's been announced for Title Tuesday is an open challenge with Mercedes Moné for the TBS Championship. That's it. And you know why that is? Tony Khan realizes he's fucked. He's fucked. Dynamite is being bounced out of its normal time slot, which is never a good, for any show, it's never a good thing. That's number one. Number two, they're now in NXT territory. That's NXT's night. It's like Wednesday is Dynamite's night, Tuesday is NXT's night. And they're doing this joint show with NXT, and I call it NXTNA. So they got their big showdown going on next Tuesday. And I don't even know what playoff games are going to be airing that night. I mean, who the hell knows? I know tonight they had the Yankees and the Red Sox. But on Tuesday, I don't know what games may or may not be on. So I feel like Tony is sort of just resigned to the fact that, okay, our usual audience may not be there in the numbers that they're usually there. And I don't want to really give away any of my major championship matches. I'm going to save them for the fucking pay-per-view. And honestly, if that's the logic here, I can't say that I blame him. I really wouldn't want to blow through too many of my big title matches either in that situation. It's a losing proposition. I think he understands that. But this is your AEW Dynamite 6-year anniversary show. Yes, Brodito and Takeshita and Okada, they said nothing about that being a title match. So unless that changes during the course, which I didn't understand. I did not understand Don Callis, talking about how, he's putting together this super team of Takeshita and Okada to challenge Brodito next week, and there was no mention of it being a tag team championship match. So, as far as we know, that is not a title match, and I have no idea why that wouldn't be, just in storyline, in kayfabe, right? Because title matches, they give them out like candy. Right now, it's just the I almost said the U.S. title open challenge. It's the TBS title open challenge. But this is your Dynamite 6-year anniversary review for the first day of October, 2025. I'm the Sala Monster. Thank you for being with me. A brand new month. We turned the page on the calendar, and we are going to talk about Dynamite to kick off the month of October. Like and subscribe. Super chats are open. I know our friend Joseph Stewart. Man, I got to give Joseph a salute. If I had a hat on, I would tip my cap to him right now. We got assaulted by questions and comments and the super chats. He is definitely showing some love tonight. He is the king of October so far. It's only October 1st, but he is the king of October, right? You hear about that in baseball? King of October? Nah. The king of October is Joseph Stewart. And some of the super chats actually may have been updated to a Halloween variety. I don't know. A little birdie told me. So anyway, I'll be reading your messages a little bit later on here in the stream. And of course, channel memberships also open as always. And thank you for hanging out with me on Monday night for the Raw post show. We had a great sound off this past weekend, episode 931. We had a great TNT last night over on JD's channel. So a lot of content rolls on here. We got, of course, SmackDown coming up later this week. And then episode 932, I'm already hard at work on notes for that. So I do appreciate all of the support and all the kind comments for all the content. I just wanted to mention that here. Now, let's go back to the beginning of the show here because earlier today, the Young Bucks were shown outside of the Hard Rock Casino. Again, they were in Florida tonight. Nick Jackson's favorite place in the world, he said. Matt Jackson had an idea, though, for a grand entrance because, you see, his brother is a gambling addict. They won that $500,000 purse money in that match weeks ago. And his brother is trying to gamble it all away. Matt wants him to conserve it. But Matt was convinced by Nick, you know, look, we should spend a little bit of that money. So Matt had all these ideas for what their entrance would be like. He talked to production. It's going to be a whole big spectacle. So Matt went off. He left to go somewhere. And Nick held up the duffel bag full of cash that they want. He told Brandon Cutler, who was filming all of this, told him, you know what? We could double our money. So then we got highlights of him at the casino playing the slots and the slots in various games. And he went to the high limits slots room and he lost all of his money. So they cut back outside where Matt finds a very dejected Nick. Matt's very excited. He wants to tell him about all the big plans for tonight. Our pyro is going to be out of control. We're going to have confetti. We're going to have live tigers. We're going to have elevators. Alligators, I meant to say. We'll have alligators on elevators. We're going to have it all. It's going to be a spectacular entrance. And he grabs the bag and he realizes it's a little light. And he opens the bag and the bag is empty. All the money is gone. And he goes, you spent it all? You have no money left. Nick is very ashamed. They cut to Matt and Nick, who are already in the ring. They got a jobber entrance. They're already in the ring, live in the arena, and the graphic on screen says, the broke bucks. We're back to the broke-ass bucks. Right above it, it said, account balance, $0.00. Well, I'm very happy that they went back to the broke bucks. I was very sad when they ended that. So I'm happy they went back to it. Yes, I want that hashtag trending. That's right. Hashtag alligators on elevators. Is there anything more terrifying? Imagine you're in the mall and you're too lazy to climb up and down the stairs. So there's an elevator, right, to go from the second floor to the third floor because you want to go upstairs to Old Navy because that's where you do your shopping. So you're waiting for the elevator to come down and the elevator comes down and the doors open and there's a fucking alligator on there, right? I would just collapse and die on the spot. But like, how cool would that be, right? That would go viral on TikTok. It would have like 50 million views. Let's get that trending. They open with the Bucks and Josh Alexander against Brody King, Bandito, and the returning Kenny Omega, who got his old music back. Good. This was Kenny's first appearance since Kyle Fletcher sent him out of the 2300 arena on a stretcher last month. Don Callis sat in on commentary for this one. Omega set up for a dive from the ring out onto Alexander. Bucks cut him off with a double super kick. And Alexander got the better of Omega. That took us into our first picture-in-picture break of the night. Is that the equivalent to snakes on a plane? Yeah, I mean, kind of. I mean, snakes on a plane is worse because you're trapped on an airplane. You have nowhere to go. So that I would say that's worse. But I mean, I certainly would not want to open the, you know, door to the elevator and find a fucking alligator on there. Although here in New York, you'd be surprised on the news sometimes. You hear about these exotic animals that these people are like hiding in their apartment. There was a guy in Manhattan a few years ago in his apartment building. He had a fucking tiger. People are out of their minds. Who knows what they have at home? Who knows what I have here? You don't know. I may have an antelope in the other room. How do you know? Maybe I have a fucking zebra on the couch downstairs watching TV. Omega executed a flip dive out onto all three heels coming out of the break. When he stood up, he looked over at Callis, who got up and ran away from the announce desk. The baby faces all hit simultaneous pile drivers. A little while later, Omega hit Alexander with a Poison Rana. He followed up with a power bomb and a V-trigger. Omega hit Alexander with another V-trigger. Bandito performed a 21-plex on Alexander, and Omega finished him off with a one-winged angel. So this was one of those weekly party matches that we get on these shows every single week, and everybody hits a bunch of big moves, and the fans, you know, cheer for the baby faces, and Kenny Omega gets the needed first win back, right? You got to bring Kenny Omega back here on TV and have him lose. So that was the right call. Now, after the match was over, Omega and the Bucks shared a moment in the ring. Excalibur talked about how their role Yeah, he talked about them both being the founding fathers of the company and their role in starting AEW from the very first episode of Dynamite. So it looked like they were being cordial with each other, but Alexander hit Omega from behind. And the Bucks watched while Alexander hit Omega. And as he was attacking him, we hear Tarzan Boy. Here comes Jack Perry and Luchasaurus. They kept them off the show last week because they wanted their Dynamite return to be this week. They were barely on the show. This was it. What they did here in this segment was the only thing that they did all night. But they wanted to save it for tonight's show. So this was their first appearance on Dynamite together in I don't even know how many years. When was the last time we saw these two together as a tag team on Dynamite? It probably had to be fucking 3 years ago now. So they come down to the ring. Perry hit a double DDT on the Bucks. Luchasaurus then delivered a double chokeslam to Matt and Nick. Alexander went after Perry, who fought him off. And then Omega downed him with a snapdragon. Omega then approached Jack Perry and he starts shoving him. He's getting up in his face. And he was talking some shit to him like, you know, he didn't forget what Perry and the Elite did to him last year when he got stretchered out. That was another stretcher job that he did. Today's episode is sponsored by Mint Mobile. I don't usually like hearing the word no. I didn't like it when I was a kid and my parents would tell me no. I didn't like it when I asked that one girl out in college and she said no. No can be a dirty word, but not if you're still overpaying for wireless. That's when it's time to say yes to saying no. At Mint Mobile, their favorite word is no, as in no contracts, no monthly bills, no overages, no hidden fees, no BS. That's why I said yes to making the switch and getting premium wireless for just $15 a month. You're probably overspending right now for overpriced wireless with their ridiculous monthly bills, unexpected overages, and hidden fees. With Mint, plans start at $15 a month. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text, all delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone and your own phone number with any Mint Mobile plan and bring along all of your existing contacts, too. Since I started using Mint, I've had no complaints about their service. It's been fast. It's been reliable. No drop calls or, hey, you sound like you're underwater. All right, I've had that before with other carriers. Plus, when I get my bill each month now compared to what it used to be, it is staggering to think how much money I was throwing away for inferior service when I could have been with Mint all along. I'm glad I gave Mint a shot, and you will be too. You'll be very happy, especially with this special offer for Sound Off listeners. Ready to say yes to saying no? Make the switch at mintmobile.com/Solomonster. That's mintmobile.com/Solomonster. Upfront payment of $45 required, equivalent to $15 a month. Limited time new customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds may slow above 35 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details. So they bickered and pushed and shoved each other. Perry shoved Omega aside and then hit the Bucks with a suicide dive. They fought to the back. Luchasaurus followed. And so now, Kenny Omega is left all by his lonesome in the middle of the ring, and he has a microphone. And he's going to speak to the crowd. He said, 6 years. It's been 6 years, and he's been there since day one. He has seen the highest of highs and the lowest of lows. But what you can take pride in is the journey. It's all about the journey, and he's proud of some of the people in the building that have been there since day one, and if you haven't been, that's okay too. They value and appreciate each and every single fan. They've made so many friends along the way. They've even lost a couple. What matters is that they experienced it together, and he is a better person because of it. So thank you for everything that came before, and those who joined them from this day forward. And then he went into his closing spiel, I must bid you adieu, and before he's going to hit that last line, actually he does hit the last line, but then the lights go out. Now, the lights are off. We don't know why. We know someone's going to be there, we just don't know who. And this was certainly not someone I was expecting to see here in this segment. So I can say that they got me here as at least as far as I wasn't expecting to see Andrade when the lights came back on. The lights come back on. And there is a guy in the ring behind Omega. He's got a mask on. Got long hair. And he's got a mask, and he slowly pulls the mask off to reveal Andrade. So Andrade El Idolo is back here in AEW, and the fans chanted, holy shit. He clotheslined Omega down. or he knocked him down and he laid a beating on him. He had a spinning underhook DDT, right? The message. That was his move, the message. Don Callis climbs into the ring. And when I see Don Callis climb into the ring, I believe my actual reaction was, ah, fuck. As I'm watching this, I go, they're not going to do this. Surely they're not going to do this. But he gets in the ring. He puts his hand out. And Andrade shakes his hand. And they embrace. And Andrade is not only back in AEW, but he is now the newest addition to the Don Callis family. He is the ever-expanding Don Callis army. He is joined as a soldier in this army. I guess he's the replacement for Wardlow. If Wardlow had not gotten injured, I do wonder if Andrade would have been added to this group. The answer is probably yes, but I just look at it as, okay, he's taking the spot that would have gone to Wardlow. And Callis raised his arm, and they left together. And, you know, on the one hand, all you can do is laugh. Just the absurdity of continuing to add more and more members to this group. Even though, you know, Takeshita is probably not long for the Callis family. They've already started teasing. You know, we can see where that's going, you know. And within a matter of months, he's probably going to be on the outside looking in. So on the one hand, I laugh because it has gotten very out of hand. But let's admit something here, okay? We have to admit something. Being a part of the Don Callis family for Andrade, compared to where he was, the spot that he was in the last time he was in this company, this is an upgrade. I'm not saying it's a massive upgrade, but it is an upgrade from the spot that he was in and the group he was with and the television time they were getting. With the Callis family, these guys are all over the shows. Dynamite, Collision, tag matches, singles matches. I can think of a worse spot, you know, for Andrade to debut in. The idea of having him with someone like Don Callis as his manager, as a mouthpiece, I don't object to that either, because that was the one thing he was missing in WWE. And I said it over and over again, and it didn't have to be Zelina. It could have been Zelina. It could have been anybody. But he needed somebody with him. That worked for him in NXT. It would have worked for him a lot better than, you know, the position they had him in on SmackDown. And for whatever reason, they just said, well, it's not needed. I don't know why. Having someone like Don Callis with him, I think in that regard, is also a good thing. And it doesn't have to be Callis. It could have been anybody. But just putting somebody with Andrade. You know, previously it was Jose the assistant. So, again, it could have been anybody. Callis comes out now. He does his whole ring introduction for Hechicero. Yo soy Hechicero. And he's, you know, he's got his way of introducing him and speaking on his behalf. So these are all, I'm not saying that those aspects of this are bad, but man, it's just, you know, I said it about Wardlow. I'll say it about Andrade. My biggest fear with Wardlow. And they actually did this, the first Dynamite appearance. But I do wonder if they knew at that point how hurt he was and they just didn't want to really do much with him until they knew maybe the severity of the injury. My biggest fear with him is that you add him to a faction like this, and he's going to fade into the background. He's just going to become background noise. You really want to shine a spotlight on this person and put an emphasis on them because they just debuted, they just returned. And my fear is that it's just like Alexander, right? He's just going to get kind of lost in the noise of it all. And they have to try to avoid that as much as possible with Andrade. Andrade's not going to be challenging for the championship, you know, right away or anything like that. But put an emphasis on him in a way that maybe they weren't putting an emphasis on him before. Which is probably why he left in the first place, because he wasn't happy with the position he was in. He said, okay, goodbye. That's why he left. So they have to try to avoid that. I hope they're able to do that. You know, debuting him as a surprise on the anniversary show, it reminded me a lot, you know, if you think about it, he attacked Kenny Omega. Kenny Omega is one of the biggest stars in the entire company. Again, not a bad spot for him to be in. Attacking somebody like Omega, setting up what you would think would be a match of Wrestle Dream between Omega and Andrade, right? And I'm sure that'd be a fucking great match. But it reminded me of when Malakai Black debuted in AEW. And what's the first thing he did? He went after one of the biggest names in the company, one of the EVPs, in Cody Rhodes. And for a little while there, it was great because he beat Cody. I think he beat Cody more than once. So it looked like they were going to parlay that into something much bigger for Malakai. And for reasons that still remain a mystery to me, it never happened. And Malakai was in a much better position to be elevated as a top guy than Andrade is. And again, for whatever reason, they just didn't do it. So there's some similarities here in terms of him debuting and going after a top name, an EVP. The question is in the follow-up, you know, and how do they slot him into the Callis family? If you had to make a ranked order of how Tony Khan is looking at these men and ranking them in the order of importance, right? You know, Okada is going to be number one and Takeshita probably would be number two. So like, who's number three? Who's number four? You know, it needs to be Andrade. He needs to be, you know, seen at that level and doing, you know, what he can in the ring. As far as like doing the dance with a big name, he's going to be doing the dance with Kenny Omega soon. And that's great. Although that does beg the question, Kyle Fletcher, who I just blanked on. Of course, Kyle Fletcher is also at the top of the list there. But Kyle Fletcher obviously had a little something to do with Kenny Omega not being on television the last several weeks, and he had nothing to do with any of this, which was very bizarre. But the thing about Andrade being back in the company, he left on good terms. Some people might be surprised by this. When he left WWE, when I talked about this on the Sound Off a few weeks ago, I said I would not be surprised if he ended up back in AEW because he didn't burn a bridge on his way out. I didn't know if Tony would want to bring him back, given the fact that he did leave him to go back to the other place, and there might be a little bit of, you know, kind of bad feeling there. But he actually left on really good terms. He said only positive things about Tony. Tony said positive things about him. He did business on his way out with that World's End match with Miro. You could look at other people that left that company and kind of nuked the bridge on their way out. He was not one of those guys. And that's a smart thing. This is exactly why it's a smart thing to not nuke the bridge and make it impossible for you to come back, because chances are at some point down the road, it may be years from now, but at some point down the road, you may want to come back. So Tony swung his arms open and said, hey, good to have you back. And so it happened just that quickly, because you never know. You never know when you may end up going back. I do believe that he made history tonight, because I believe that Andrade becomes the first man to go from WWE to AEW, back to WWE, and then back to AEW. I can't think of any other person who's done that. He will now be the answer to a trivia question from here until the end of time. He like Rick Rude, right? The only man in history to appear on Raw and Nitro in the same night. People still remember that to this day. He is now going to be a trivia note, an answer to a trivia question in the future, because I can't think of anybody else who's done that before. Now, they aired a highlight video showing highlights of the last 6 years of AEW Dynamite from the very beginning until more recent times. This was actually a great video package here. It's a great showcase. Again, it made me long for the days of Dynamite, the early days of this show. But this was well put together and showed most of the key moments on this show over the last 6 years. They showed Mark Briscoe after this. He was sitting backstage, cutting a promo. It was just Andrade, people are telling me. So there you go. Andrade, man. He made history tonight. WWE, AEW, WWE, AEW. And now HOG. He's going to be with us in November, November 15th. Our big Long Island debut at the big event. But Mark Briscoe was backstage. And he was talking about how his life for the last 6 months has been consumed by three letters, MJF. Briscoe said he learned MJF is all talk and said, I told him, don't keep invoking my brother's name. Keep my brother's name out of your mouth. And he says words have consequences, something that he proved it all out. MJF also told him that he couldn't win the big one, but he must have won one big enough because he sent MJF away on sabbatical. And he mentioned that MJF cost him the chance to wrestle Kyle Fletcher for the TNT Championship. And now tonight it was supposed to be Hologram, but Fletcher took him out, so now it's going to be Orange Cassidy. And he said he can be very happy for his friends, and he wants to see them succeed. Once Cassidy wins the TNT title tonight, he'll be there celebrating with him while MJF is at home picking tacks out of his ass. Midway through this promo, I thought he was about to do the thing. The thing I talked about last week. And he didn't do it. He didn't even allude to the possibility of challenging or wanting to challenge for the AEW World Championship, which makes absolutely no sense to me whatsoever. This man went in there at All Out, and he beat MJF. He beat a former AEW World Champion, a man who spent weeks leading up to Forbidden Door, basically, you know, begging for a championship match and wanting a championship match, and Hangman said you have to earn it. Cash in your contract or earn it, but you don't deserve one. And he ended up getting one because, remember, he was threatening to murder, was it Christopher Daniels or something? Some stupid angle. But it's like, okay, well, he vanquished MJF. And Hangman was all buddy-buddy with Briscoe, too. They were acting all friendly on TV back then. But you would think that now that Briscoe just got the biggest win of his career as a singles talent, how is he not advocating for wanting a championship match with Hangman Page? How is Hangman Page not coming to him and offering him a shot at the AEW World Championship? You and I have something in common. We both hate MJF's guts. I beat him and so did you. And you know what, Mark? I respect the hell out of you. And I think you deserve a shot at the World Championship. Instead, we have Hangman coming out last week because they were in Pittsburgh defending the title against fucking Lee Moriarty, who we will probably never see on Dynamite again for the rest of the year. You know, it's back to Ring of Honor with him. He could defend against Lee Moriarty last week, but you can't set up a championship match for tonight or Title Tuesday next week with Mark Briscoe and really build up a big world title match and tell that story. And it's like it was on the tip of his tongue. I thought he was going to mention it here in this segment, and he didn't. I don't understand that. I don't. MJF was right. Apparently, he doesn't want to win the big one. Beating MJF was enough for Mark Briscoe. It doesn't get any better than that. Okay. Sure. Well, we had another championship that was on the line after this, and that championship was the TNT Championship. It was Kyle Fletcher defending the title against Orange Cassidy, subbing for the injured Hologram. Unless, of course, Hologram is Orange Cassidy under a mask. I guess we don't know for sure. He comes out, Cassidy does, and he's got the media offline message again in his Tron, so apparently that is being done on purpose. He had a single firework for his pyro that shot off on stage as he came out. Callis stood ringside for this rather than rejoin the announce team. A couple of minutes in, Cassidy put his hands in his pockets and Fletcher booted him in the face. Good. Boot that fucker in the face. I would do the same thing. Put your hands in your pockets. That's what's going to happen. So Cassidy went up top. He went for a crossbody. Fletcher caught him and hit a Michinoku driver for a near fall. Cassidy gave him a Stun Dog Millionaire in return. And then he tried the move again. Fletcher, though, avoided it. Excalibur noted they were halfway through the 20-minute time limit here. Fletcher hit a Leaping Tombstone pile driver, only for a two count. Fletcher then set up for his Brain Buster. Cassidy countered into an inside cradle that got a two count out of it. Cassidy went to the ropes. He got cut off as Fletcher went for a superplex from the middle rope. Cassidy, though, fought out of it and used a headbutt to knock OC off the ropes. And at that point, Don Callis wasn't feeling too good about this. And he jumped up on the apron. Referee was focused on Fletcher for reasons that I simply cannot explain. All of a sudden, someone dressed like Hologram runs out to the ring. And it's clearly not Hologram, okay? It's clearly not him. But they want people, I guess, to think that it might be. I don't know who these people are. I don't think these people should be allowed to drive, to feed themselves unsupervised. Okay. Nobody believed, other than the announcers who were dumb as fucking bricks out there, that this was an hologram, but he's got the hologram mask on. So he runs out there and he runs off Don Callis and he gets up on the apron and he's acting all friendly towards Orange Cassidy, right? And then he crotches him and Fletcher finishes him off with a brainbuster onto the top turnbuckle to retain the TNT championship. And it was, you know, the match was good. When it was over, Fletcher and the hologram imposter, who I should mention, he had hologram's mask, but he was wearing these black and red pants. I think it was like black with red trim. And it was very similar to El Clone, I guess is what they're calling him. You've gotten these little teaser vignettes for weeks now with El Clone is coming. His evil twin, his evil Lucha twin. So the two of them put the boots to Mark Briscoe until Roderick Strong and Kyle O'Reilly ran out to chase them off. And the heels went to the stage. Callis headed to the back. When he came back out, he returned with Kazuchika Okada, Konosuke Takeshita, Andrade, Josh Alexander, Lance Archer, Rocky Romero, and Hechicero. Did I get them all? They're like Pokemon. You have to collect them all. So the fake hologram then unmasks to reveal another mask underneath. And he ripped his shirt off. So he revealed a tattoo on his chest. It's on his right pec. So it is unmistakable that it is Ares under the mask, in case you were wondering who it was. Who has wrestled everywhere. I mean, this guy's been all over the place, including House of Glory. So, I mean, once I saw that tattoo, I said, okay. I mean, I had read the same reports, and I knew that it was going to be him, but until you actually, you know, debut him on TV, you never know. So, yes, that is who is under the mask. But again, the announcers, they were forced to play it off like they didn't know that this wasn't the real hologram, which just makes them sound like fucking idiots. I was waiting for Kenny Omega, though. I'm like, okay, Kyle Fletcher's out there on stage. He's got his back turned. Kenny's going to come on back out. Not only that, but Andrade is there. The two men that have attacked him. No Kenny Omega. We never saw Kenny again for the rest of the show. Maybe he's re-injured again. Maybe he's going to disappear for a few weeks. I don't know, but given the way that things were left off with him and Fletcher last time, it was very strange that there was no mention of Kyle Fletcher in Kenny's promo. There was no attempt to go after him. There was no attempt to call him out, because one would think that upon Omega's return, they would be setting up a match between Kyle Fletcher and Kenny Omega, possibly for WrestleDream. Now it looks like we're going to get Kenny Omega and Andrade. Right? Because now that would be the most sensible match. If they do Omega and Andrade with the idea of them building to Omega and Fletcher, maybe at Full Gear, because I could see that as a possibility. What does that say about Andrade if he's sort of the stepping stone, you know, for Omega to get to Fletcher? I'm just assuming, though, that we are going to get that match eventually. You watch the show tonight and it's as if it never fucking happened. So, I mean, I'm just looking forward creatively and logically and saying, okay, they can get two matches out of this now. But then that means Andrade is the stepping stone to get to Fletcher and Omega. And I'll say the same thing I said last week. When and if they do that match, that's a match that Kyle Fletcher needs to win. Because he was never going to beat Hangman, right? And he should not have beaten Hangman. But to go in there now, because now he's proven he can hang, right? That was the whole story coming out of it. Oh, I can hang now. I've proven to the world that I could hang with the top talent. Okay, well, you've already proven it, but now you have to go in there and win. So it's very important, I think, that if they do that match, he comes out of it with a W. And that's regardless of whether the TNT title is on the line. You could do a non-title match between them, but Fletcher has to win that match. But does that mean that Omega is going to beat Andrade first to get to him? Or are we just completely ignoring that whole Fletcher-Omega thing altogether? That's what they did tonight. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's the end of it. We'll see. Let me put this photo up again because it's just... This was the scene at the end of that segment, by the way. You see all the different members. There he is right there. There's El Clone, the smallest member of the bunch here in the Callus family. Well, you know what they could do? I'll say this. If you're Ares and you're about to debut this new gimmick, it's got to be deflating when you find out that Hologram fucked up his knee. And he's hurt, and he's going to be gone for a while. So I felt bad for the guy when I first heard that Hologram was hurt, because I thought, okay, they may not even debut him. They may not even bother using him, at least not in this gimmick. So it's a positive sign that they actually ended up using him anyway. The most logical thing to me would be you build up a streak. What is Hologram? 34-0? You build up a similar type of streak with El Clone. So that way when Hologram comes back, and it could be many months before we see him again, but now you could do streak versus streak. And it's going to make for a fine main event on a random collision. All the colliders rejoice. Today's episode is sponsored by Hims. No one plans for hair loss. You might think about it from time to time and get all freaked out about it. Then you say to yourself, I'm not there yet. I've still got time. But time has a funny way of creeping up on you. And one day you look in the mirror and you realize, oh no, time's up. You don't have to be freaked out anymore. I've got good news for you. Through Hims, you can take steps to get your hair back and do so with confidence and access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss in its tracks and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops to jump through, just ingredients with a track record of results. Hims offers convenient access to a range of prescription hair loss treatments with ingredients that work, including chews, oral medications, serums, and sprays. Doctor-trusted, clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil can stop hair loss and regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. No hidden fees, no surprise costs, just real personalized care on your schedule. Think of Hims as your digital front door that gets you back to your old self with simple 100% online access to trusted treatments for real health concerns all in one place. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit Hims.com/Solomonster. That's Hims.com/Solomonster for your free online visit. Hims.com/Solomonster. Individual results may vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information. What is Hologram's injury? They have not announced it. They don't announce these things. The belief is that it's a knee injury. I don't see what else it could be. I mean, I watched that match last week. I didn't even notice he was hurt. But there's a few moments in there where maybe he's showing some issue with his knee, but it wasn't really that obvious. People are like, oh, if you go back and watch it, I'm like, you don't really notice it too much. But from the sounds of it, it's a knee injury. So anyway, they replayed the angle from earlier in the, just a few minutes before. They replayed the angle with Omega and Andrade after a break, which may not seem like a big deal, but honestly, for this show, it is, because they don't always do that. They'll shoot an angle and they'll just move on, and they may make like a passing reference to it, but they don't always replay it. And it seems like such a small, obvious thing, but it's very important, you know, when you shoot an angle like that and you want to make sure people know that it's a big deal. This is how you help get that thing over, by saying, hey, if you missed it, we got to take you back and show you what happened at the beginning of the show, because you're never going to believe who showed up. You're never going to believe what happened. So they were really trying to hammer home the whole Andrade return and Andrade attack on Omega. We go backstage to Renee, who is joined by the TBS champion, Mercedes Moné. She congratulates her on beating Riho at All Out, points out that she's just 13 days away from becoming the longest reigning TBS champion of all time. Jade's streak is about to fall in less than 2 weeks, and Mercedes will own it all to herself. So Moné says that she will defend her TBS championship next week on Title Tuesday, because she's never wrestled at Daily's Place before. She really wants to wrestle there. But she wants to defend against somebody local, someone from Florida. I know who it won't be. Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, after they were in Pittsburgh last week, and there was not even a mention of the good doctor. Now, I believe she might actually be practicing in Florida. She might have an office in Florida, but she will not be the Florida person who steps up to challenge Mercedes next week. I have one person who asked me before, they mentioned the name Lacey Lane to me. Lacey Lane is the former Caden Carter from WWE. She's a Florida girl, and I know they had her in a few weeks ago for at least one. It might have been a couple of Ring of Honor matches. It's an open challenge, so who knows? Maybe it's Lacey Lane who's going to show up next week. I don't know. Otherwise, I don't know who it would be. I have no idea. But Renee says that now they also have women's tag team titles. You knew this was coming. So she brings that up, and of course Mercedes wants them, but she wonders who could she get as a tag team partner. Enter Puppet Monet. I still can't believe they never sold these things. What a missed opportunity. Puppet Monet, though, comes into the picture. Mercedes is, and of course Harley Cameron is there, and Mercedes is thoroughly disgusted, and she rejects Harley's offer to team up, which of course means they're probably going to team up. And you know, I was thinking about this. There was a time earlier this year, you go back and watch some of the reviews that I did in February. There was a time earlier this year where I thought that by now, like October, I think I even said October, had they spent the rest of the year until now really building up Harley Cameron to be a more credible challenger for Mercedes, because it was not the right time for her to beat Mercedes when they had their match at Grand Slam in Australia, I think is where they had their match. But you tell the story where Harley, she continues to fight and scratch and claw and try to become a better wrestler, and she racks up some impressive wins maybe over the course of the summer, and she really fights her way into contention. If you wanted to, you could still have had her be the one to beat Mercedes to take the TBS championship. You could have circled back around to that story. Harley is a different performer now. She's more well-prepared. Mercedes still doesn't take her seriously, but she would be in a better position where it's like, okay, I can actually believe that. Maybe she would be the one to win the TBS title. Well, here we are in October. And I know that she was sidelined for a while. She had the nose injury, and she missed a little bit of time for that. But that doesn't account for all the other months that she was around. She has wrestled, I want to say from what I saw, a total of maybe 5 singles matches, maybe, since the match with Mercedes earlier this year. They have done nothing to put this woman in a better position than the position that she was in earlier this year, where you would look at her any differently than you did at Grand Slam. She is no more credible a challenger, potential challenger for that TBS title than she was then. I just think it's a wasted opportunity because there could be something there, but they never did anything significant with her. Like, even if you take the injury time missed out of the equation, I feel like they wasted the last 6 months. They could have actually built her up to be potentially the woman to do it, you know, and like an AEW original name, and try to make her into a bigger star that way. And then Mercedes, of course, can go off and, you know, begin her quest for the world championship, which we all know that's coming. But here we are now, and it's like, well, it's Harley Cameron, she's dressing up like a cat and doing all the same shit she was doing with the puppet and everything. I mean, I love Harley Cameron. I think she's very entertaining. She's a great character on the television show. She's very likable. The fans like her. I like her, right? She's got that quality about her. But it's unfortunate because I think that's a missed opportunity. She's legitimately in no better position now than she was then. Wasn't elevated in any meaningful way whatsoever. So ultimately, who the person is who takes the TBS title from Mercedes, I mean, it is wide open. The one thing that would be a mistake is for her to just surrender the title. Is it going to be a case where she sets the record? Is she's beaten everybody and she's like, you know what? I've done all I can do. I don't think so, but that would be awful. But who does she lose it to? You know, Alex Windsor. We haven't seen Alex Windsor for weeks, I assume, because she's probably been with Will Ospreay, you know, since they're together. And he just had his neck surgery in the last couple of weeks. So I would imagine we would see her back on TV shortly. Are they going to go back to Mercedes and Windsor? Because they did that match and Mercedes beat her. That felt like over, done. Okay, so who's next? Is there anybody on the horizon? Is there anybody believable on the horizon who you would look at and go, oh yeah, that person makes sense? People saying Willow Nightingale. Hey, Willow Nightingale works. It's a match they've already done, but there's history there. Could certainly go back to it. You could have a situation where Chris Statlander is the world champion and Willow Nightingale is the TBS champion. I wouldn't mind that. But if they do Willow, it's going to be a while because Willow is in the middle of... Well, actually, you know, now that you mention Willow, that's interesting because they could use this women's War Games match, which we now know is going to be taking place November 12th on Dynamite. So we got a ways to go before we get to Blood and Guts, not War Games. But Mercedes was on Twitter teasing, like, oh, Blood and Guts. Like, she may want to get involved, even though she has nothing to do with any of those women. If you wanted to, you could have Willow on one side, Mercedes on the other, and you can actually create a story within... you know, the confines of that Blood and Guts match, where coming out of it, we end up getting a TBS championship program between Mercedes and Willow. You can use the women's Blood and Guts match to kick off a story between those two. It is doable. Tekla isn't a bad choice. Yeah, but Tekla's a heel. Heel against heel in this situation, and having Tekla be the one, it just doesn't make sense to me. I would want to go with somebody the fans can really rally around and the fans really like. And Willow certainly fits the bill. I mean, Willow is probably, I mentioned Harley, but Willow is probably the most likable babyface they have on the female roster. I mean, obviously, taking nothing away from Toni Storm. She's very popular. But Willow just has this natural... just likability about her that I think even Toni Storm doesn't have. We have the Death Riders. Speaking of unlikable, John Moxley, Claudio, and Daniel Garcia against the AEW World Champion Hangman Adam Page, Powerhouse Hobbs, and Samoa Joe. Joe was relentless on Claudio at the start. He was going after the eyes. He got pulled away by Hobbs even. Taz said that Joe wanted revenge for what the Death Riders did recently to Katsuyori Shibata. We got frequent tags from the Death Riders who kept the pressure on Joe. They isolated him in their corner. Joe tagged in Hangman, who lit up Garcia with forearms and punches and a slingshot dive. Then Hobbs ran through Garcia. I mean, a strong gust of wind could run through Daniel Garcia. Moxley tried a dive. Hobbs caught and slammed Moxley repeatedly on the apron before ragdolling him to the floor. After a break, Hobbs and Claudio, they got into a slugfest until Claudio powered Hobbs up and over with a gut-wrench suplex. We got a hot tag to the Hangman, who, when he took the tag, appeared to steal the tag from Samoa Joe, who really wanted it. Hangman took it, and it looked like Joe was not happy about that at all. Garcia got planted with a Death Valley driver. Moxley, though, tagged in, and we got a face-off. All in, all over again, between Hangman and Moxley. And so we had them trading shots. Claudio got a blind tag. He saved Moxley, who laid out Hangman with a pile driver. Hobbs ran in. He laid out Claudio with a spine buster until Garcia pulled Hobbs to the floor. Joe sent Garcia crashing outside until Moxley then laid out Joe with a paradigm shift. Page ran in with a dead eye on Moxley, but he turned right into a pop-up uppercut by Claudio. Joe made the save that led to Hangman hitting the buckshot lariat to Claudio to win it for his team. Now, when this was over, Hangman's got his championship and he got the two trios titles. One for Joe, one for Hobbs. And he hands one to Hobbs and he goes to hand one to Joe, but he let go of it before Joe could grab it. So it fell to the floor. And Hangman thinks nothing of this, and he turns, and he's over here, and he's celebrating. He's cutting a promo in the camera, but in the background, you see Samoa Joe is not happy that his belt dropped to the floor. Hobbs is like, it's okay, man. Like, he's trying to, you know, calm him down, but Joe is not happy about this. He spins Hangman around, and he got in his face, and things got very heated. Jerry Lynn runs out with a bunch of security geeks. They hit the ring. They separate the two men. Joe is yelling that Paige has never beaten him. So Joe threw a shot. Security quickly intervened and got in between the two of them. Hobbs tried to keep the peace, and he walked Samoa Joe to the back. Now, in the back after this, Renee was with Hangman asking for his thoughts on what just happened out there with Samoa Joe. And Hangman said that in 6 years, he's never been so confused. Yeah, I could say the same thing. There's a few confusing things on this show, but he's never been so confused that, you know, Joe had a bitch fit for what? Dropping his belt while handing it to him? So Hangman realizes what this is really about. It's not about that. What this is really about is Joe wanting a world championship match. And also Joe telling him that Hangman has never beaten him. Hangman says he's grateful for the ops helping him against the Death Riders at All In, and he's fine giving him a title match. So it could be you and me, Joe, at WrestleDream. Later on, in the back, Renee catches up with Joe and Hobbs, and Joe said that maybe he's been so preoccupied with the Death Riders, and maybe he's forgotten who he is. And he needs to remind Hangman of that as well. Not only himself, but he needs to remind Hangman of who the hell he is. He is Samoa Joe, a man that Hangman has never beaten. He's never beaten him in the ring. And on any day that he has ever existed, he's never been better than Samoa Joe. This right here is all cowboy shit. But unfortunately, he's standing in front of Samoa Joe. And allow him to welcome him to a world of deep shit. So that answers the question of who the hell is Hangman going to defend his title against a WrestleDream? We got our answer. We got our answer and we got the official graphic. That's how you know it's official. It's Title Tuesday next week, but we're not getting this match at Title Tuesday. We're getting this match at the pay-per-view. And look, I like the match. I will never have, you know, any sort of objection to Samoa Joe going out there and cutting down fools on the microphone and just spitting fire on the mic and cutting promos, because that's his bread and butter. I mean, Joe's a great wrestler. You know, obviously he's getting older. There's things he can't do that maybe he could have done 20 years ago, naturally. Look at AJ Styles. AJ Styles is retiring next year because he says, I want to get out before my body just completely gives out on me. And there are certain things that I just can't do anymore. You know, I do a good job of masking them and hiding them, but like, I can't do it. And that's AJ. But AJ and Joe, I mean, these guys, these are the Ring of Honor guys. You know, these are the guys that were a part of Ring of Honor, especially Joe and Danielson and Nigel and all those guys when I first started watching ROH back in the day, and they had a certain style that they worked, very hard-hitting matches. Of course, AJ and TNA was doing all kinds of high-flying stuff. It catches up with you. You get older and it catches up with you. But the one thing that Joe is still good at, no matter what age he is at, is putting a live microphone in his hand and letting him tear down his opponent. He's always been great at that. He was great at that in TNA. He was great at that in WWE. He did it with fucking Brock Lesnar in the ring once. One of the best in-ring promo segments you'll ever see. And it's a sin that he never got at least a short run as the WWE champion or the Universal champion. You know, at least he got an AEW title run here. But that's the one thing that I'm looking forward to between now and WrestleDream is, you know, these promos and getting these two, you know, in the ring together, like a face-to-face. All right, you guys hash it out, right? No physicality. Put a live mic in his hand and let him rip. So I don't object to that at all. I think that's great. And they want to do Hangman and Joe at WrestleDream, then that's fine. But it was a very weak way It was a very sudden, rushed, weak way of setting this up. And it just reeks of what it is, which is we need to find an opponent for Hangman because the real story here is MJF. Swerve is out. Osprey's out. So it really comes down to Hangman and MJF, and we can't do that right now because MJF is not available. So what do we do to fill in the gap between now and then? How do we build up credible, strong challengers for Hangman Adam Page? Kyle Fletcher was not the strongest challenger for him. He was untested in that situation, and they went out there at All Out. They had a 40-minute match. Did not need to be 40 minutes, but they had a long match, and Fletcher did fine. I mean, I don't think anybody honestly thought Fletcher was going to go in there and put in a bad performance against Hangman. Like we know the guy can have great matches, but there was never any doubt as to how that was going to go. And it's the same thing here. There's no doubt as to how this match is going to go. Hangman is going to retain his championship. So what they're doing is they're giving us, you know, what hopefully is a really good match. I actually don't think the match itself is going to be as good as what we got with Hangman and Fletcher. Again, Fletcher and Joe, it's just, you know, you're talking two different eras. Fletcher's the young guy, you know, he can go, he could do all the flashy stuff. Joe doesn't do any of that. What these two can go in there and have is just, you know, a really fun brawl. And that's fine. But it was just a very lazy way of setting this up where all of a sudden Joe is upset that, you know, you've never beaten me. Like, where is this coming from? Joe put his body on the line for this guy at All In. They put a chair around his neck and they stomped it. He was gone for weeks because he thought it was important to stand up for this man against the Death Riders. There's been no indication of there being any sort of animosity between them or jealousy on Joe's part. This all came out of nowhere. It felt very manufactured. That was my only issue with it. Match itself will be good. I'll put it this way. I'd rather have this than Hangman against Claudio, you know, or fucking Garcia or one of the fucking Death Riders. Hangman and Pac I could live with because that also would be a great match, but we don't need the Death Riders in this match. That's the one good thing. They left the Death Riders out of this. We got a video package for Jet Speed and Willow Nightingale talking about their run-in with FTR and Stokely Hathaway last week. Kevin Knight challenged either member of FTR to a match. Willow said that she'll be there ringside to have their back. So then they cut to Stokely, who said that there's no one he hates more than Willow. And they have a surprise for her in due time. I don't know what this surprise could be. I don't know. Do I have AMC Fear Fest on the other tab open? No, I had to turn it off. I had it on earlier. I think the Halloween movie started at like 3 o'clock this afternoon. They had a different movie on this morning when I guess it didn't really start until midday. But yeah, I try to watch as much of it as I can every year. They have it every year, the whole month of October. All kinds of Halloween movies and scary movies. I love Fear Fest. So Stokely said that since Knight wants to run his mouth, he can have his match, but he won't find out which member of FTR it'll be against until Collision. We had Timeless Tony Storm against Ty Mello. And we got a more serious demeanor for Tony Storm as she came out here. She did not work in her usual wrestling gear. Taz said that she looked almost lost without her AEW Women's World Championship. She was dressed, you know what she looked like? She was out there. She looked good. She was dressed like a gumshoe from like the 1940s. You know, they would have their own office. The hat on, the newspaper all over the table. That's what she looked like out here. And they had her in black and white. The only thing you could see was the red lipstick. I always like it when they shoot it that way. It just looks cool. We may get Kyrie against Tony in Be the Booker. I don't know. We're at 324 likes. We need at least 400 to do Be the Booker. There may not be Be the Booker tonight, which would be very sad. So you got to get those likes up. Ty got a decent amount of offense here in this match, but this had two goals, okay? Two goals. We had two goals in this match. Yeah, I mentioned she looked like a 1940s gumshoe. Remember Betty Boop? If you saw Who Framed Roger Rabbit, then you would know. But that made me think of Betty Boop for whatever reason. I think she was around the 40s, right? That cartoon, 40s, 50s, somewhere around there. Anyway, we had these two goyles here in the match. One goal was to get Tony back to her winning ways. She lost her championship at All Out. Now let's get her a win so we can get her back in that win column. The other goal here was the post-match segment. You know, get the match out of the way, feed her a win, and then put a mic in her hand and let her cut her promo and issue the challenge that she ended up issuing. Now, she gets a microphone. She says it all out. When the bell rang, she didn't hear victory nor the defeat. She heard nothing. A silence so deep it completely gobbled her up. When she left the ring, all the questions followed her into the dark as she wondered, who the bloody hell am I? Now, there were some brain-damaged idiots at this point in the crowd who gave her the what treatment in the middle of this promo. But she says, Chris Statlander, I'm not finished with you, and I need to know one-on-one. Name the time and name the place, and I will be, and instead of saying timeless and hitting her usual line, she dropped the mic, and they faded to black. And these two goyles left the ring. Statlander actually had a promo in the back later in the show, and she accepted her challenge for Wrestle Dream. Man, Title Tuesday, in the mud. In the mud. They should just rename the show. WWE renamed their show. It was NXT TNA Invasion. It is no longer TNA NXT Invasion. It's now Showdown. I think Tony should rename this show. Just call it Homecoming. You don't even have to call it Title Tuesday. Just call it Homecoming. I don't know why he ever bothered calling it Title Tuesday in the first place. We have one fucking championship match announced for next week. It's like they would have those Battle of the Belt shows, which were a fucking waste of time. And I think even on those shows, it was like one title match. Battle of the Belts. What the fuck are you doing here? Now, we were also told Eddie Kingston is going to be facing Dralístico on Collision this Saturday, and we go to a video package that shows Sammy Guevara, who's back to being a heel now. Sammy Guevara saying that Eddie Kingston's momentum will come crashing to a halt as they have a lot of history together. Yeah. Yeah, they got some history together. They've got some off-camera history together. Kingston, in his part of the video package here, is with Hook. Told Dralístico that he's going to get beat up thanks to Sammy running his mouth. You know, the fact that this segment here, this was the first time that we heard from Eddie Kingston, that we heard words spoken by Eddie Kingston, who's a poet on the microphone, okay? You take an Eddie Kingston promo, a Samoa Joe promo. They still have some of the best promo guys in this company, by the way. And it doesn't matter how old these guys get or broken down they may get. If their mouth works, they can still make money. Eddie is one of those guys. The fact that he missed 16 months, and he was one of the more beloved figures on this television show, in this company. 16 months go by. Not even a mention of him. He comes back at All Out. And the fact that this is the first time that we heard from him on this show and they didn't put a live mic in his hand that first fucking week that he came back is a complete and total failure. I have no idea. No idea how they didn't put a microphone in his hand and just, if nothing else, let him go out there and speak from the heart and thank the fans. And if you want to shoot an angle at the end of the segment and have a heel come out and interrupt, then that's fine. But they didn't even do it. He came back at All Out. He had the match with Big Bill, which was no good. And the less said about that, the better. But he has been treated like a complete afterthought since he came back. I don't understand it. We had the Gates of Agony with Ricochet on commentary against The Swirl. Now, I asked the question last week when I heard about the Swirl. What the fuck is a Swirl? I thought it was an ice cream flavor. But no, The Swirl is Blake Christian and Lee Johnson. Johnson made a tag. He ran wild at one point. He sent Bishop Khan crashing outside, laying him out with a somersault plancha. Toa Leona tried to slow the momentum, but Christian flew in with a tornillo. And Bishop made the save, allowing Toa Leona to turn Blake Christian inside out with a pounce. Johnson got squashed with a corner cannonball. And then they put him away with their open the gates, finish for the win. So everybody in the chat, do me a favor. All right. Pour one out for The Swirl. There you go. That's about the only place that they're swirling is down the bowl. Thanks for coming. So after the match, Ricochet left commentary and delivered a spirit gun to Lee Johnson until the Hurt Syndicate's music hit, and Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin and MVP, they walk out on stage, and MVP has a mic. And he's, you know, mentioned, do we have any? And he's going through all the different area codes, including 305, all the different Florida area codes. Everyone's popping and cheering for him. Mr. 305 over here. And he says that at All Out, he embarrassed himself, and he owes an apology to every Hurt Syndicate fan, allowing a bald booty shaker and his backup dancers to beat him. Maybe he's lost a step, but MVP knows he can still fight. He doesn't want to wrestle, though. We're not talking about a wrestling match. We're not talking about putting his boots on or anything like that. He wants a no disqualification street fight. And Ricochet accepts the challenge, so we're still doing this, I see. I mean, look, it's good to get GOA more reps on TV if they're serious about pushing them as a team, as a commodity in this company. This is what they should be doing. They should be getting consistent television time every week. If that means they squash a couple of guys, or, I mean, this was mostly a squash, then so be it. But unless MVP is taking the loss next week, I don't see the benefit in having the Hurt Syndicate get their win back, you know, over these two guys. I don't know that it really benefits them if that's how this ends up in Jacksonville next week. Alicia Atute was backstage with Don Callis, Kazuchika Okada, and Konosuke Takeshita. Callis said that just when you think the family is down and out, he adds two new members in Andrade and El Clone. Callis issues a challenge for next Tuesday to Brodito in Jacksonville to face the team of Takeshita and Okada. And again, there was no mention of this being a title match. Takeshita was caught off guard by the announcement here, and he did not look thrilled about the prospect of teaming with Okada. And he asked Callis, like, me and him. And Okada said, yeah, you and me. And they got up in each other's face, but Callis calmed things down, and he was very excited for next week. So again, I mean, until I hear otherwise, this was not announced as a championship match, and I mean, it should have been. The way they throw title matches around on this show. And fucking GOA. I mean, they beat the Hurt Syndicate in a trios match at All Out, but, you know, they got themselves a tag team title match a couple weeks ago. So I don't know why Callis, if he's got so much juice in this company, that he can't request a tag team championship match. But as of this moment, I don't believe it is one. And they close the show with a tornado tag team match, our second tornado tag team match on television in the last 48 hours, with Darby Allin and Chris Statlander taking on Wheeler Yuta and Marina Shafir. So the heels entered last. So Darby and Statlander, who were already in the ring, got out of the ring and cut them off in the crowd during their entrance. Statlander threw Yuta into a wall. Shafir briefly locked Darby in a rear naked choke. The women brawled to one side of the building. Shafir trapped Statlander in a head scissors choke. Statlander, though, was able to kind of maneuver her up onto her shoulders and walked with her a little bit and then dropped her down face first on top of the barricade. Darby held Shafir and Yuta as Statlander jumped off the retaining wall onto the pile. So they spilled to ringside. Darby sat Yuta down on a chair. And he gets into the ring. And he goes for his warp speed suicide dive. And the thing about these Darby Allin suicide dives is the key word there is suicide. Every time he does it, it looks like that's what he's committing. And that's what he nearly did here. Because, of course, Wheeler Yuta got up and he moved out of the way. And so all Darby Allin got was a face full of chair. Face and neck, because he kind of flips his body as he flies out of the ring. But he crashed through the chair. You could see broken pieces of the chair on the ground. And the Death Riders had control going into the commercial. So during the break, a bunch of chairs got thrown into the ring. Shafir got barely enough of a 619 into a head scissors spike on the apron. Darby got planted with a German suplex onto the pile of chairs by Yuta. Shafir and Statlander, they fought on top of the barricade outside, where Statlander poked her in the eye and then suplexed Shafir off the barricade through the, I don't know if it was the timekeeper's table or a bunch of chairs that were there. I think it was the table, but there were a bunch of chairs that were on the ground anyway. Back in the ring, Darby delivered a superplex onto the pile of chairs, but of course, only for a two count. Both men fought back up in the corner. This time, Yuta delivered a hangman's neckbreaker onto the apron. Yuta then grabbed a sack. He grabbed his sack. He brought it into the ring, and he emptied out a bunch of thumbtacks. And I said, what are we doing here? We just had a fucking thumbtacks match at the pay-per-view barely 2 weeks ago. Did this match really need thumbtacks? Why did this match need thumbtacks? What is the obsession with thumbtacks? Statlander cut Yuta off, ate an angle slam, though, for her efforts. Yuta looked at the tacks, and he wanted a suplex onto them. Statlander, though, reversed and did one onto the chairs instead. Shafir applied a rear naked choke, but Statlander spun her around, picked her up, and then planted her feet first down on the ground, but she wasn't wearing any boots. She was barefoot. So they did the Joey Janela spot, and she went bare feet down onto the thumbtacks. So that answers the question of why we needed thumbtacks in this match, so they could do this stupid spot. That's not a good enough reason. Yuta grabbed some baby powder, which his mother still uses on him, but Allin ducked, and Shafir got blinded instead. Darby then threw Yuta into Shafir, and she locked her own partner in a choke, not realizing that it was him. Statlander flew in with a 450 splash onto both of them on the mat, and then Darby delivered a coffin drop onto Yuta for the win. You know, the best thing I can say about this, the mixed tag team element at least made it a little bit different from not only the other tornado match we saw on Raw earlier this week, but it made it a little bit different from the normal, you know, garbage match that we see all the time. I'm happy that Chris Statlander is getting more attention the last few weeks. This is her second week in a row on the main show, you know, on Dynamite, that she got the main event spot. Outside of that, though, it was your typical AEW garbage match. You know, a lot of the same weapons and shit. We see it every week. So the faces may change, but it's the same garbage match that we get every week. Now, when the match was over, Toni Storm walked out on stage slowly, and she stared at Statlander. She was completely expressionless and emotionless. Statlander, they had a little ramp to the ring. So Statlander gets out of the ring, and she walks over to Toni on the ramp, and they're staring at each other, and they start smiling at each other, and then they shart. They start this show really got extreme here at the very end. They start throwing shots at each other. I got my words all jumbled up there. So officials run out on the ramp, and they start to try to pull them apart. They end up taking them to the back. Darby is left fighting all by himself in the ring with Wheeler Yuta. And he's hitting Yuta with his belt. until Pac shows up. And I'm still trying to get over how different Pac looks now, especially wearing clothes. So he gets in the ring and he blindsides Darby and he wraps Darby's belt around Darby's neck and he's choking him with it. Moxley and Claudio, they join in the ring. I know, guy, hey, Sax and Sharts, this was quite the main event that we had here. That would be worse than a Nia Jax botch. Unless you combine the two and then you have a botch where Nia Jax Sharts in the ring. I mean, that would just be awful. That'd be awful if that happened with anybody, though. Anyway, Moxley and Claudio are in the ring now. And Moxley gets on the mic and he says that at WrestleDream, Darby has zero chance of doing what he needs to do in order to win because they have an I Quit match coming up. Never say die, relentless Darby Allin. He says, Moxley, he doesn't know how to quit, but for the first time, Darby Allin will say the words, I quit. And Pac then picks up Darby. He got a running start, hits the ropes, and builds up some speed, and he turns Darby inside out with a lariat to close the show. I like the anniversary package that they did earlier in the night. Outside of that, you know, for a big anniversary show, it felt like any other episode of Dynamite. There was really nothing special about this particular show. It was nice to have some more people in the building for these weekly shows than they normally have. You know, still not a huge crowd, but you know, it does make a difference. You know, the more people you can put in these build, and the crowd for what it was pretty lively. You know, for the majority of what they saw here on this show. We got some solid matches. We got some title matches made for WrestleDream. So at least the pay-per-view card, which is still a few weeks away, that card is coming together. Not a whole lot for next week. I mean, they announced three matches for next week. But again, for like Title Tuesday, the big homecoming show, there's not too much that we really know about just yet. It really does. It feels like Tony is just sort of throwing in the towel and accepting his fate, you know, when it comes to next week. Let's take a look at the Twitter poll. What did you think of Dynamite, the anniversary episode? 48% thumbs up. 52% thumbs down. Yeah, Kwan says the anniversary package was the best thing on the show. You're right. It was. Snowdog, that's an urban legend. He says, I think Sid sharted in his match with The Undertaker at WrestleMania 13. That's been an urban legend for many years. That when Undertaker picked him up for the tombstone, I think it might have been around the end of the match that he sharted on him. Somebody should ask Undertaker about that. He's got a podcast now. He's very chatty. He's like Chatty Cathy now. Somebody ask him if Sid sharted in their match at WrestleMania 13. These are the questions that need to be answered. These are the things that we need to know. Were you a fan of the Christmas Carol movie with George C. Scott as Ebenezer Scrooge? No. I've seen it. I'm not really a big fan of like those old Christmas movies. Like it's... What's that one that everybody, they always play it on TBS every year? It's a Wonderful Life. No, it's not. My idea of a great Christmas movie is like Jingle All the Way. Of course, the greatest Christmas movie of all being Die Hard. We all know that. He also says, do you think if Dominic Mysterio and El Grande Americano become a tag team, do you think they should be like Jurassic Express? They should be like Jurassic Express in what way? Is El Grande going to carry him to the ring on his shoulders like a child? I think that would be terrible. Is Batman Mask of the Phantasm your favorite Batman movie? No, The Dark Knight is my favorite Batman movie. And then Batman 1989? And then maybe Mask of the Phantasm. Have you seen Batman Sub-Zero? I have no idea what that is. I feel like you've just merged two video game characters together. I know Sub-Zero and I know Batman. I don't know Batman Sub-Zero. Did you know John Astin, who played Gomez Adams in the Addams Family TV show, played the Riddler in 2 episodes of Batman 66? I'll tell you what, if I ever have any kind of historical question that I need answered about Batman, anything Batman related, I know who I'm going to. I know I'm going straight to the source on this one. Wow, we are 9 out of 10 on the goal. We might actually get a double Be the Booker shot tonight. Joseph says, would you like to see Keanu James as Dominic Mysterio and Liv Morgan's lawyer? Do they need a lawyer? Is there some storyline coming that I'm not aware of? They're going to go after the paparazzi or something? No, I don't want to see Keanu James involved with either one of them. There it is, 10 out of 10. You guys did it. Uffman Entertainment, the $5 super chat. With tonight's setup, could you see AEW do a Dynamite at the theater at Madison Square Garden one day, since MSG is crazy expensive? Well, I mean, they had around 3,500 or 3,600 people in the building tonight. So I don't know what WWE did when they were at the theater at MSG in March for that Roadblock show. I don't know what it fits. It might only fit around 5,000 or so. If they put a strong enough card together, I think they're not going to sell it out. But I think if they put a strong enough card together, they could probably get a decent crowd in that building. I think it's a beautiful venue. So, yeah, I mean, you know, a nice venue, but still an intimate venue. And they are running smaller, more intimate venues. But you need the right card for it. So if they have a special episode of Dynamite, you know, that they could put together a strong enough card, then sure, why not? But if he doesn't think he can sell the tickets, if he doesn't have the confidence that they can move enough tickets to make it worthwhile, you know, financially, it has to make sense. It might not be the Garden proper, but I'm sure it's not cheap to run there. Joseph says, thoughts on the news of AEW and DC teaming up? I saw some of the artwork. It actually looks really cool. I think they're doing a bunch of comic books. I think that's pretty badass. Yeah, I think aren't they debuting it, I think, maybe at Comic-Con next week? Joseph says, what is your favorite Batman movie poster? It's the Dark Knight one. Have you seen the TV movie Crime of Innocence from 1985 with Andy Griffith as an evil judge that puts an innocent girl in jail? You know, that's a totally random question, but I actually have seen that movie. I was an Andy Griffith fan. I was like a Matlock fan. I was a fan of a lot of those shows from back then. I mean, I saw them later on, but, you know, some of those law shows and cop shows and detective shows from like the 80s into the 90s. I was too young to have watched the Andy Griffith show. I don't go back that far. But watching him as just this irredeemable piece of shit judge in this random made-for-TV movie, which I think might actually be based on a true story, it's a trip. It really is. Like, especially if you know anything, if you ever saw any of the old episodes of Matlock and then you see him as an evil judge, like, it's a stark contrast to what you're used to seeing him in. Yeah, but that whole story is all fucked up. Dry Chicken says, Don Callis is really giving Paul Heyman a run for his money when it comes to recruiting people. I think Don Callis is giving the fucking Bullet Club a run for its money when it comes to recruiting people. He'll end up having more members in Bullet Club and all of the offshoot groups, the War Dogs. Joseph Stewart, who is your favorite character on Mama's Family? Mama. Thelma. Do you remember the show Taxi with Danny DeVito and Christopher Lloyd? Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Buy or sell John Wayne or Clint Eastwood? Clint Eastwood. Dirty Harry, baby. Dirty Harry. We got the Moldy Cheeseburger. Andrade made history by becoming the first wrestler to go back to AEW. I bet Miro and Malakai Black are going to jump ship and join the Don Callis family as if he doesn't need any more members. So all the guys that left are going to come back just to all just be dumped into the Callis family. Dry Chicken, Andrade coming back to AEW and aligning himself with Don Callis was surprising. I believe this is a reset for Andrade. Sometimes change is needed. Well, for his sake, I hope so. Because he left there for a reason the first time. Hopefully for him this time it's different. Also, the Don Callis family wants the gold from AEW, New Japan, CMLL, and other promotions. Well, Hechicero had a shot at the Ring of Honor World Championship a few weeks ago, and he fucking lost. So, and Kyle Fletcher had a shot at the AEW World Championship, and he fucking lost. It's not going too well. Fabian Garcia says, doesn't seem like they'll have a dream match this year, as in 23, they had Danielson versus Sabre, and 24 was Ospreay versus Takeshita. Maybe they add a match. Talking about Wrestle Dream, there's still time. They have a few weeks, so you know the title matches are coming into view. As far as the Women's Championship, the World Championship, did they announce anything else title wise for that show? No, just the I Quit match, right? Moxley and Darby. They're going to add a bunch of matches. Maybe they add a match. I mean, yeah, they're going to add about 8 of them. As far as that one big dream match, unless you consider Kenny Omega and Andrade to kind of fall into that category, that may be the closest thing you get. Honestly. I mean, the real dream match fell through. The real dream match was going to be hologram and fake hologram, and now they can't do it. They got to come up with a plan B. Fabian says, who has a better lineup between AEW and WWE in terms of break glass in case of emergency should their world champion go down? My own bias, AEW. Well, if Hangman went down, the problem right now is if Hangman went down, you want to talk about in-ring talent. You've got in-ring talent up the ass in AEW. So you want to get a great main event, a great match out of somebody, that's not going to be a problem. But you want to have your world champion, if he's going to be the face of the company, you know, he's got to have some juice. He's got to have some star power. And in the realm of AEW, Hangman is like the lead character. If he goes down, I do not want Moxley to be an option. Okay, I'll just say that. But you've got MJF. You've got Omega. You've got, again, Fletcher. He's not there yet. I don't want to say Fletcher. You got Bobby Lashley. I mean, he's been a world champion before elsewhere. And the fans love him. I'm just saying you could conceivably slot him into a spot like that temporarily if you had to. You don't have Swerve. You don't have Ospreay. That hurts. Because they would be the obvious backup plan if something happened to Hangman. On the WWE side, if that Rollins knee injury was real, right, the one that he faked, Punk would be the champion right now. I would give LA Knight a shot. You know, give LA Knight a chance to run with the championship. You've got McIntyre. You've got Jacob Fatu. I mean... Yeah, I mean, I think AEW Well, you got Orton. I don't know. I might actually give the edge to WWE. Just in terms of that guy who, if he's not like already a made guy, maybe he's almost there. And you could kind of slot him into that position and feel comfortable they're gonna do well. I might actually have to give the edge to WWE. Yeah, Gunther. Didn't mention Gunther. Sami Zayn. It's a good question. Duff's Vids. Person one. I'm afraid for the calendar. Person two. Why? Person one. Because its days are numbered. He's going for kind of the low-hanging fruit, very basic ones, but they're clever. Give him credit for them being clever. We got Kev Carroll. I liked what you said about Dynamite recapturing the magic. They will eventually get back to that point. WWE has went through many ups and down stretches. This is part of being a major promotion. Yeah, WWE is very different than it used to be. Very different, it's just ownership, their way of operating. It's a very different world we live in right now, wrestling-wise. And WWE's making a lot of money, but there used to be a soul there, and that soul is not there anymore. Boss Toys. The countdown begins to Andrade again being dissatisfied in some way. It's nice seeing him back, but we know it's true. Also, Broke Bucks has been great so far. Yeah, I mean, they're not being shoved down our throats in like a top kind of role where they're the champions and we have to sit through it every week. They come out with the big elaborate entrance. We dress up as the founding fathers and come through the crowd and all that bullshit. This is much more entertaining and they're not in your face every week. It's nice to take a break every now and then. I thought we were going to take a break from the Death Riders, but they're still there every week in the main event. They don't go away. We can't get rid of him. MacTub, do you think Triple H sabotaging Drew, L.A. Orton, Cena theory? Because he wouldn't appear big and strong in post-match picks is out of envy or creative bankruptcy? I mean, I don't think it's an intentional sabotaging of Cena. Theory, I just think, I get a sense he just never liked some of these people, you know, that you look at and you wonder, what happened with this guy? What happened with that person? And Triple H is just not a fan of theirs, you know? I think Theory is one of those guys. I have nothing to base that off other than just watching the product and watching the way in which he was handled after WrestleMania 39. I don't think he intentionally sabotaged Drew. I think he likes Drew. I think, you know, a lot of it is just a lack of good creative ideas for these people. And he probably has his personal favorites. How much of it is envy? Who knows? Could be a small part of it, but I think of those two options, I think more of it has to do with creative bankruptcy, honestly. The Juliet. Going on, the Juliet. Juliet says no 90-day non-compete clause in his WWE release for Andrade? Well, you don't know when his... I mean, just because the news came out that he was no longer under contract to WWE, we don't know for sure contract-wise when exactly things went south, although he was in the TLC match at SummerSlam, right? That was August second or third. Yeah, maybe something was negotiated then. I mean, that is sooner than I... That's why it was such a surprise. I mean, that was sooner... For some reason, I thought it was 3 months today, but no, it's been 2 months. That is strange. Yeah, we have him coming into House of Glory, but that's mid-November. So you're pretty much out of the danger zone at that point. Also, wonder what WWE thinks of TNA letting Tessa Blanchard return for a match at CMLL, given their ownership of WWE and AEW/CMLL's tie. Is she wrestling a match in CMLL? I'm sure all of that was cleared through the proper channels if that is happening, so that would be a little surprising to me. He says, I meant WWE's ownership of AAA in the last Super Chat. Yeah, I mean, I would be surprised by that, but obviously if that is happening, then it was cleared. Oz and Glory has been watching pre-COVID Dynamites lately. The big crowds of Laps fans are nice and every story was fresh, but the roster and lore is infinitely better now and the storytelling is much more sophisticated. I don't know if sophisticated is a word I would use, but there's pros and cons to both. I still prefer the early days of AEW. There was just a certain vibe that it's just hard to recapture that. Duff's Vids, what's it called when a dwarf waves at you? A microwave. There you go. You're getting better at this now. Yeah, it's like in the winter when you have to let your car warm up for a few minutes. Same concept. Duff's Vids, what do lesbians use for self-defense? Scissors. MacTub. Seth's been dull since 2015. Triple H's botched face turn led to a boring WrestleMania 33 match. His current gimmick uses flair to mask his lack of charisma. Whose current gimmick? Do you mean Becky? We got Dan Richards. Undertaker told the Sid story on TSN in the late 90s. It's true. Well, there you go. Apparently, it's been confirmed that Sid sharded. Possibly in Undertaker's face during their match at WrestleMania 13. Philip Bowman, who is the better Batman side villain, Mad Hatter or Victor Saz? Victor who? Mad Hatter. Scumdog. Hello, Solo. What wrestler do you think would have a small fighting chance against Jason Voorhees? I would have said Braun Strowman, but apparently he might be playing Jason Voorhees. I'm going to say Brock Lesnar. I think Brock Lesnar would have a fighting chance. Gold Matthew, I was at All Out, my first AEW pay-per-view, and I really thought Pac was Austin Aries. Yeah, if Austin Aries hit the gym and really bulked up, I could see that. Also, who will be the next AEW signing from WWE? I'm hoping for Theory. Theory is the one I threw in my predictions at the beginning of the year. I said he would be in AEW before the end of 2025. He's one of those guys where a change of scenery might do him a lot of good. I think you say guy. I say girl. I say Bailey. Duff's Vids, I tried to tell the cashier a joke the other day, but it didn't seem to register. Don't you hate when that happens? That happens here in the Super Chat sometimes. It doesn't register. 5 minutes later, 15 minutes later, I get the punchline. and Nash the Stampede. What's up, Solo? Been a big fan for years, but wanted to know what your thoughts on either AEW or WWE running a major show in the Las Vegas Dome, like UFC. Are you talking about the Sphere? I don't know if you're talking about the Sphere, but if you are, it's very expensive. I don't think it's. I personally don't think it's worth it. I think UFC cost them like $20 million, I think. Something ridiculous like that. I'm sure if you were actually like in the Sphere watching a show in there one time, it would be a great experience to be able to say you did it once. But if you were running a show there, I don't see how you make your money back on that. This seems kind of pointless to me, you know? Thank you, brother. Hopefully we'll hear from you more often. Thank you, Nash the Stampede. Well, we hit one goal and then we smashed the other one, which is great news because that means that we are doing a double round of Be the Booker, and I can't remember the last time we did that on a Wednesday, so holy shit. Let's get to it.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to Be the Booker.
Been a while on a Wednesday, hasn't it? Leopoldo is with us. Spooky Leopoldo. All right, Be the Booker time. You know the drill here. You know how this works. We get to book our own wrestle dream. This is going to be our wrestle dream card. We got the Banger Bros, right? The Banger Bros? The Banger Bros, yes. Sheamus and Drew McIntyre. Oh my God. Sheamus and Drew McIntyre. So you know it's already going to be a banger of a match. When Sheamus and Drew McIntyre bang away with the Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkov. There'll be some banging going on in this match, I'll tell you that. Iron Sheik is going to break their back and make them humble. That's what he's going to do. Sheiky baby. On the ladies' side, we have the now retired legend, Mako Satomura. Former NXT UK Women's Champion. And Mako Satomura will be in the ring with Mayu Iwatani. There you go. Inject that shit right there. We're going to get Mayu Iwatani against Io Sky. That's actually going to happen October 26th, I believe. In Ryogoku. And Mako Satomura and Mayu Iwatani. It's a Joshi dream. Tony Khan wishes he could book that match. All right, our first main event is going to be... Oh, it's Mil Muertes of Lucha Underground fame. El Macias. Mil Muertes. Against the Monster Abyss. Yes, we swept that shit right out the door. Just like the Mets going into the postseason. Mask versus mask. We could do Abyss and Mil Muertes. You know this is going to be one of those extreme garbage matches, though. Tons of weapons and plunder and garbage. Boards with nails in them. Thumbtacks, blood. It's going to be one of those matches. And since you unlocked round number two, we go for the double sweep. It's like a unicorn. It's rare. You don't see it very often. Some people don't believe it exists. But occasionally, you do get a double clean sweep. So that's what we're going to try to do. But we got to add some stipulations. Solo Monster's choice. I am incapable of making a choice here. This is terrible. You want me to make the choice? I get to pick the stipulation for this match. You know how much I love the big blue cage. I'm going to go with the big blue cage. How about we do that? Big blue steel cage tag team match. It is Los Matadores. And they have the bull, El Torito, with them. It's like El Torito is packing in this image. Los Matadores in a cage match against Randy Orton and Edge. And I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to give this the bell because we're going to do a spot. We're going to work it all out backstage before the match. We're going to do a spot where El Torito is going to get launched off the top of the cage. And when he lands, he's going to land in an RKO from Randy Orton. So the spot they did in War Games, basically, with JD McDonagh a couple years ago. We're going to make this work. Our ladies' match is going to be a tables match. It's going to be the Slim Jim table that's going to be broken here in this match. Them and their fucking branded tables. We have, there she is. Hello. Eve Torres is waving at me. I think I'm smitten. The former Divas champion Eve Torres in a tables match against Kana. This is Asuka in her final form, basically. This is the Asuka that would go around and mist people in the face. I can't vote against the murder clown. And actually, Eve, towards the end there of her career, she really improved a lot. She's a very capable wrestler. More than most, I feel like, during that era. I have no issue with Eve. I give that the bell. Which means we only have one more to go. If we go one more, we're getting the sweep. I got a good feeling about this. Hell in a Cell. You pay off a big feud in Hell in a Cell, it could only be the main event. Only question is, we're 5 for 5. Will we go 6 for 6? Why? The Death Riders are here, everybody. John Moxley is going to be inside the Hell in a Cell. Fucking Death Riders, man. Well, John Moxley against Owen Hart in a Hell in a Cell. That is a double sweep in B the Booker. 6 for 6. You know, if some of the Mets had gone 6 for 6, we'd be in the fucking postseason right now. Instead, they went 0 for 70 this season in games where they were trailing in the 8th inning. But at least here in B the Booker, we had ourselves a good night. That's all that matters. That's right. Owen saved the day. Owen Hart saved the day. The Black Heart against the Death Rider. The Mets would have lost to the Dodgers. Now, you only think the Mets would have lost to the Dodgers. They would have been the comeback kids in the postseason, but they fucked it all up. Yes, 0 for 70. Go look it up. Pathetic. Pathetic. Anyway, thank you guys for allowing us to hit the goal tonight. And then bring on a bonus round. Doesn't happen very often, but when it does, it's a lot of fun. We get to try again on Friday because that's the next time I'm going to be live with you here on the channel. That'll be the SmackDown post show. Bring your questions, bring your super chats, Halloween and otherwise. And we'll do it again on the SmackDown stream. And then again, this weekend coming up is episode 932. Of the Sound Off. As we kick off what will hopefully be a very strong month of October Can't do it without you. I need you guys here with me. So thank you again. Be well. Stay safe. I'll see you guys on Friday night. Until then, take care, guys.